Love Osho podcast brings you the real stories of the people whose lives have been inspired and transformed by Osho. We explore why thousands of people are falling in love with Osho and where to find them. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to the Love Osho podcast. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Anand Vikrant. Vikrant took sannyas in 1988 and is a counselor and psychotherapist, trained at the Northern Illinois University, USA and Osho Multiversity, Pune, India. Vikrant is a member of the Association for Humanistic Psychology, Transpersonal Psychology and the Association for Body Psychotherapy. Vikrant is the author of 6 books and numerous articles on the awakening of consciousness and personal development. Vikrant has taught in various psychology programs, including the Department of Counseling, Adult and Health Education and Northern Illinois University, USA. He's a former research consultant on active meditations in Sydney, Australia, and has been training therapists and facilitators in humanistic transpersonal psychology for more than 20 years. Vikrant is the founder of the Experiential Center for Human Development and creator of the Returning to the Source workshops, Biodynamic Structural Massage, and Somatic Emotional Processing. Okay, Vikrant, so welcome back to part 4 of this epic journey discussing Osho's influence on modern psychology. Today, I'd like to talk with you about your work, discuss possible scientific research on Osho meditations, and hear your final thoughts on how Osho shaped the world of therapy. Let's start with science and research. It's a topic very dear to me. I understand that you were a former research consultant on active meditations in Sydney. So tell me about that. What was that about?
Well, actually, this was a project that was started by Manisha James, several years ago, where she started doing research on active meditations, I mean, on meditation in general. And she somehow set up a web page and a team of people who would do this research. I think it was around 2002. So what we did, basically, we dedicated several months to do bibliographic research. And we did some what we would call early stages of setting up some sort of research on dynamic meditation specifically. I think the web page still exists. It's called activemeditation.org or .com. I'm not so sure. So I was part of that team. And basically, I was more involved in bibliographic research and searching in articles online on that kind of thing. And also I was consulting in terms of which direction this research should take and who should be the people that we need to somehow contact for to make it work. So that was my part of it.
As far as you are aware, is there any published scientific paper on Osho meditations?
I have seen papers published in the Journal of Humanistic Psychology, and I saw, if I'm not mistaken, papers published in the Journal of Transpersonal Psychology. And I saw some other papers, which are older, I think, on Self and Society, which is a British magazine. Yeah, I think it is what comes to mind. Now, I know there's been a lot of research done for PhD and master degree thesis because I had the chance during that time to review several of the researches that were done in that area.
I'm sure you know, in the past 15 years, there's been an explosion of scientific papers on meditation, on the health benefits of meditation and advances in technology, biofeedback devices, which allow to record the physiological changes in the body and record that.
Yeah. So, this was something that was done almost 20 years ago. So my memory is not so good now. And I remember coming across, I would say, a good amount of research on Osho's work on meditations, as far as I remember. It wasn't as extended as you can find on transcendental meditation, because transcendental TM specifically focused on getting a lot of scientific research done, because when you're initiated in the technique, the first thing that they put forward is all the scientific research that has been done about it. So, but I remember that there was, I would say, a fair good amount of research done on the effect of dynamic meditation on active meditations in general.
Yeah, I think this is crucial for making Osho's meditations more accessible to people in terms of credibility. And it's one of the reasons why transcendental meditation and mindfulness are so popular, is because there is research. Whereas, you know,
And I think it also has to do with what the academia, you know, finds interesting. And it's very interesting because if you look at the basis of mindfulness, then it's so famous nowadays. Basically, it's the same thing as vipassana. It's the essence of meditation. But they don't use this word meditation. As in, wow, this is something different. And basically, it's been taken by cognitive behavioral therapy. And then who are at this moment in the world is the leading, let's say, scientific psychology. So then it's all right. But this happens all the time in the world of psychology, you know, something that, for instance, humanistic transpersonal therapists have been working on for years, like relating and empathy, a relational psychoanalysis. It's becoming in vogue, like, and then it's accepted, you know, because somehow humanistic transpersonal psychology was always considered on the edge, like countercultural psychology, like hippie-like psychology, pop psychology, they even call it, you know, to put it down. And there was a lot of work in this area. And when more mainstream, let's say, academia psychological approaches discover something that we've been working on for the last 50 years, you know, they give it a new name like mindfulness, and then it becomes accepted. And then you have mindful trainings, but it's basically the same thing. I mean, you know.
That's exactly where I'm traveling, is that Osho was at the cutting edge of science, and always he wanted to introduce all the latest. Whereas nowadays we hear about mindfulness, transcendental meditation, whereas all the work done by Osho is somehow either not acknowledged or there is not that kind of scientific credibility to make it mainstream.
I think the issue with that is that unlike TM and other organizations that have somehow a hierarchical structure where you got somebody at the top who say, okay, everybody down the ladder will do this and this and this. As with Osho's work, it's always been a network of hearted people who wanted to somehow contribute in a very spontaneous way. It's never been done something that was, let's say, systematically done. I was looking now at some papers that I have on Rajneesh therapy, as it was called back then, Osho therapy. And there were several attempts to make something systematic, but this was never fully supported, neither by Osho, neither by the organization around it. So it always remained on individuals who had somehow some interest in contributing with something from a scientific point of view. It was never something that was supported from the side of the organizational side of Osho's work. There was never neither money nor something that was systematically organized. I think that's a big difference, because it is like if you see in the way that the Pune resort or ashram or commune worked, it was always on a voluntary basis. And when you went there, you couldn't believe that this worked in the time where most of the people that were working there were sannyasins, how it actually functioned, you know, because people were not getting paid. And there was this sort of organism that was, you know, operating in a very spontaneous way. And this has a positive side, and that it keeps it flowing. And of course, on the other side, there was nobody really really taking care professionally, for instance, of the archive, or taking care professionally of doing research on validating whatever was being done there. And specifically because people were mostly going for their own personal experience. And I can understand that. You know, you go there to work on yourself, to meditate, to have spaces, and usually you don't have a lot of spare time to, I'm going to go do some scientific research now.
Okay, that makes sense. Basically, what you're saying, it will take the willpower of an individual who wants to invest time, energy, money to do this.
And there has been guys who've done that. And there's been individuals who've done that. There was this Dutch man that I've been in contact with lately who did a wonderful research on Osho's books, for instance. And the develop of the whole, and he visited Osho's early childhood schools and found papers that Osho wrote by hand and things like that. He was really interested on the book side of Osho. Of course, he did all this research with his own pocket money, and there was no support officially for it. And he published this on the fringe, you know. So, but it was a wonderful research. And I don't know if you've seen it, but I highly recommend it. Yeah, it's called Osho Sourcebook.
Yeah, I think I know the gentleman you're referring to.
Yes.
The last point before we move on, you said that Osho never encouraged this type of research, but I feel like Osho was always, again, at the cutting edge. So my personal assumption, of course, with Osho, everything can go completely wrong, is that he would be happy to see nowadays research done on his techniques with biofeedback devices. Of course, that's not the aim of meditation, but it helps to make it more accessible to mainstream.
Yes. Again, I'm not very well informed nowadays about it, so I have to be honest in the sense that there might have been something. And now it came to mind some research that Amrit, Osho's physicians, showed me some years ago, where there was some x-rays or some sort of body scan done with people who'd done dynamic meditation, and they were researching on the effect on the heart, I remember. And he was showing me some coronary pictures. I don't know how that ended. So that's why it's important for me to say that I'm sharing information that I had 20 years ago. So I don't know what's going on nowadays exactly about it.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you so much. Let's move on. Let's talk a little bit more about your work in particular. So I understand you are the founder of the Experiential Center for Human Development.
Yes.
So what is that? What do you offer?
Well, it's a meditation and therapy center that's been going on for the last 21 years. And what we do here mostly is we offer trainings for people who would like to become a therapist, as well as weekly Osho meditations, meditation intensives or meditation camps. And we offer psychotherapy and personal development. I mean, we offer a wide range of groups, trainings, and seminars geared either to train yourself in certain techniques or to have an experience about your personal growth. The place, it's run, of course, by me. And I have a team of 15 therapists who work with me. And I have a team of 25 volunteers who somehow helps us in big groups like Primal or things like that. And it's based on my understanding of Osho's work. And I always like to be very clear about that. You know, we were discussing about it the last time when people say it's based on Osho's work, it's like, okay, it's based on my understanding of Osho's work and what he awoke in me and my desire to share this in a systematic way. We are also an Osho Information Center, although we don't put ourselves out into the, let's say, public as an Osho Information Center, because we don't want, not that we're hiding it, I mean, it's all over the web, but what we want basically is to offer the possibility of people having an experience of growth and transformation based on what Osho inspired us to do, but not focus on Osho. You know, Osho is there. I mean, you can see the pictures and we talked about him and what we learned, but it's not like we are offering Osho training or Osho, except for Osho meditations, which we definitely use that. So we have a wide variety of people attending our workshops and trainings and groups. And it's been so far, until the pandemic, very successful. I'm very happy that the center physically is located in my property, in my house, because otherwise we would have been renting a facility, as it happened to many friends. I mean, the center would have been over already. So it's still here waiting for a hopefully next year vaccine or COVID-19 exam before entering our programs. So that's basically what I've been doing in the last 21 years.
Okay, so 21 years is quite a long time. How did your work evolved through the time? What I have in mind is that, of course, Osho for me is an ocean of wisdom. And there is so much to learn every single day, and learning from Osho, learning, looking inside myself. But sometimes I want to read a book that inspires me. I want to watch some videos on YouTube. And I'm thinking, where are the thought leaders? Where are the intelligent people who can inspire and produce new ideas and content? For example, for yourself, where do you get your continuous development?
Well, this is very personal. There's a man I like very much. It's called Jeff Foster. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's supposed to be some sort of Neo-Advaita teacher. I have met him personally. I just read the stuff that he puts out. And it's something that I like very much. I personally, in the last 20s or so years, I have been in very close contact with two people who were one of Osho's main leading therapists, who were Swami Anand Somendra and Swami Ananda Tirtha, Michael Barnett and Paul Lowe, respectively. And these are people who have somehow supported me personally on my own path. You know, these were people I knew personally and I consider my friends. I don't consider them my master or my teacher in the same way that I considered Osho to be my master. But these were people whom I learned a lot personally, and they were very generous with me in terms of their time and somehow attending in my moments of crisis and things like that. So I'm very grateful to them. Michael Barnett died last year, and this year I published a book of interviews that I had with him and my experiences with him, which was my last book. And with Paul Lowe, I have been in very close contact in the last 5 years, and I did groups with him before. So these people somehow remain as an inspiration for me, not in the same level or way that Osho was an inspiration for me, but this is, of course, there are people from a more psychological point of view that are still important sources for me, like Alexander Lowen, Wilhelm Reich, Will Schutz, Fritz Perl, Arthur Janov, that I still consider brilliant in terms of their writing. A sannyasin, Krishnananda, and the codependency work that he developed, his books Face to Face with Fear and Stepping Out of Fears, for me are milestones. I mean, I recommend them absolutely to the people who are in my trainings. You know, one of the best books about working with the inner child that I have read so far.
Well, I mean, obviously, this is your own personal opinion. So, you know, we're not giving
it is my own
mark, etc. Yeah. But I'm curious to know, for you, who do you think today in the world of Osho therapy are influential, and also objectively, those people who are making a difference in terms of reaching out to people? Yeah. You know, someone can be absolutely amazing, but living in a cave and no one knows about them. So who are the people?
In terms of Osho therapies, people I personally respect very much. And again, of course, it's my personal opinion. I am very close to Anisha Dhillon, the founder of Osho Pulsation. I am also a body psychotherapist in the same Neo-Reichian line that she works. And I worked with her. So, and she's somebody I absolutely would recommend in terms of working with your emotions and the body. I like very much Maprem Turiya and the work she's done with the Path of Love and all the other processes. I was very fond and close to Viresh, also the Human University work. Lots of their work inspired the trainings and the structures that we have in our center. Krishnananda, as I said, it's somebody that I would absolutely recommend. In the world of primal therapy, Shakura, Italian Shakura, German Puja, Pramatha, and Svarup, these are people that for me are absolute teachers in this field that we also do groups in my center in this line, which is primal therapy, working with the child Tarika, American Tarika, also with the freedom process and the essence work that she does. Let me see who else from the old times, especially Vasumati, somebody I respect very much. Let me see if somebody I'm forgetting. I had very good experiences with Sugando. She was from the Mystery School originally, and I did some groups with her, which I was very much, I think she lives in Israel at this moment. In general, the people from the Human University, I have very high respect for the work they do. Yeah, that's what comes to mind at the moment.
Okay, I mean, it's good to hear there's quite a lot of people out there that offer amazing work and can really help others. That's great.
I'm sorry if somebody I know personally I didn't mention at this point.
Fair enough, you're forgiven. I'm sure. So now looking like overview of everything we've discussed so far, I think the big question is, if you were to summarize, what is Osho's biggest contribution to modern psychology, what would that be?
I think I would focus this on three dimensions. The first dimension for me is the people who worked and learned from Osho. And there were, as I said before, and we discussed, there were lots of people who somehow stayed with Osho for a while or hang out with him for a while or learned from him. And then what they went on and did their own work. Some of these people acknowledged what they learned from Osho and some other people don't. And through these people, I think what we consider today contemporary transpersonal psychology was profoundly affected. The scope and the influence of Osho's work in the world of modern psychology is first, because of the people who somehow were related with him, it's enormous. The second dimension has to do with the understanding of human psyche, which I think is very important. And I have some notes to that respect, because I wanted to try to summarize. Of course, this is my understanding, and I have to be very careful in terms of, I think Osho did everything he could to avoid people like me trying to systemize his work. And I believe his main focus was to create some sort of deprogramming from whatever structures you would have. So it's very difficult to try to create something consistent, because inevitably you have to leave things out. But I made some points about the functioning of human psyche that I think are important. Now, you have to understand that these proposals or these understanding were put out in a time where we didn't have mass media, we didn't have mass information. So these ideas were really revolutionary at the time. Perhaps if you listen to them now, considering about the amount of people who are sharing their things online, and they don't sound particularly striking. But at the time, in my understanding, they were absolutely revolutionary. Growth is about acceptance of what is, not about trying to be better or change. To be natural is to be holy, and to be holy is to be whole. And this is something very interesting. Growth is about getting back to what is natural about you. I mean, Wilhelm Reich said the same thing, but he wasn't particularly loved for this kind of statement. And to be spiritual is to be natural. I mean, this understanding, I think it's a gem. It's a treasure that your nature holds the deepest spirituality, so to speak. So it's not about getting out of yourself or bettering yourself. Spirituality is a dimension of psychology. Only that which you experience directly is yours and true to you. Beliefs are a hindrance in the path of growth. There are two ways for you to work, to work on yourself. One is to work through your neurosis, and the other one is to be aware and drop it. These are my notes. I'm not quoting Osho, I'm just paraphrasing him. You are not your mind. You're not your cognition. That is just a dimension of your being. Therapy can be a door to enlightenment. Do not reject any aspect of yourself. Face it and work through it. Meditation is the door out of the therapeutic game. These are the were things that came to me, you know, in terms of understanding, of profound understanding of human psyche. And the other thing has to do with the understanding of the psychological work. And this, I think it's very important. I made some notes about it. Western therapists emphasize working on what Swami Prem Amitabh, was a very prominent Osho sannyasin and therapist, conceptualized as the second lie. The second lie is, I can improve, I can get better, I can change negative images about myself. This is what Osho used to call the therapy for the normally ill, which is the basic understanding of Western psychotherapy, you know. Osho's alternative seems to be understood by me and Amitabh in experience the first lie directly and the energy of the second lie abates. And that is a way for transformation. And what is the first lie? The first lie is, I'm not all right the way I am. There's something intrinsically wrong about myself. So what Osho proposed was to experience the moments in your history, in your life, when you internalize this lie, I'm not right the way I am. Explore the motives, the secondary gratification of taking the position of not all rightness about myself. Explore the roots in relational, in early childhood, in relationships with your parents. Observe, become aware of your survival mechanism, the patterns of emotional survival that you develop, go into the feelings, become aware of these patterns, and become aware that these patterns worked for you before. Become aware in the present, moment to moment, remove the energy from these emotional patterns toward being a witness of these patterns. You have introjected the notion of who you are. The base of that, you think that there's something wrong about yourself. And the problem, and I think this is the basic and the greatest Osho understanding, the basic problem is not your childhood issues, the issues with your parents or your sexuality or your self-esteem or your difficulties in relating or whatever. The basic issue is that you think this is you. The basic issue is identification. The basic issue is that you think you are these pains, you are these patterns. So on a deeper sense, the issue is not any of the psychological problems, but the fact that you're not at home with yourself because you feel separate from the rest of existence. So the way home, and you can use therapy for that, is to integrate the parts of yourself that you rejected, that you neglected, that you alienated from yourself so that you can be whole again. And being whole again, you can become aware that you're part of existence, that you're a child of the universe, and that you've never actually been separated. And meditation is the door out of therapy because meditation takes you to that experience. That is, in my understanding, the greatest contribution of Osho's vision to Western psychology.
Okay, well, thank you so much. I think it's really valuable. It's a kind of a summary of 20 years of your work, or many more years of you connected to Osho and working on yourself. I'm sure there is a lot of your own individual life experience there. And I think, yeah, essentially the element of bringing meditation into therapy, we can say is really Osho's contribution, yes. And we are still working on that. We are still experimenting on that. We are still trying to digest what that means and how that works and how we can work with that. And one thing I've noticed in the world of self-development and personal growth, it's changing a lot and quite rapidly, and it's moving away from the spiritual kind of circle it's going mainstream, as well as meditation. Even the self-development work has gone mainstream, and people don't talk about enlightenment anymore. This word is kind of forgotten, you know, like it's banned. Like meditation is replaced with mindfulness, and enlightenment is kind of replaced with self-development and growth.
Or self-realization.
Self-realization, perhaps, yes. So, yeah, what's your view in terms of enlightenment and self-realization? They're just words, or there is something deeper in that?
Well, if I have to be honest about myself, for me, enlightenment is a hypothesis. I have no idea whether that is a true reality or just another area of conditioning. I because I'm not enlightened, so I cannot speak properly about things I don't know. But it's a hypothesis. Now, sometimes I have a sense that it's more an allegory of a certain stage of consciousness. And sometimes I have a sense that it's a definite reality. But I don't know. In my own experience of meditation, I have had experiences of not being this socially constructed self. So I know that there's something more there. Now, whether that can be a permanent state, I don't know. And then again, if you go back to Osho, what Osho said, then again, we get into this muddy water, because he said so many things and contradictory things about it. So my understanding is that it's enlightenment is a concept. It's a word that we use for a certain stage of consciousness on. But definitely, I don't think it's a final stage. Or a final state, because I don't think in the universe or in existence anything is final. And you can find Osho saying both things depending on who is in front of him. So I like a quote that I remember reading in Swami Amit Prem's book, Dying for Enlightenment, that it was, a master is not somebody who has achieved anything, but a master is someone who's realized that there's nothing to be achieved. So I have the intuition that somehow enlightenment has to do with the waking up to the fact that you are what you've been always looking for in the deepest sense. And that doesn't feel final for me. Now, the word enlightenment has a problem, because the word enlightenment Osho took from Buddhism is a Buddhist work. It doesn't even exist in Hinduism, because the word in Hinduism is moksha. Or samadhi, or enlightenment is a Buddhist work, a word, I'm sorry. So, of course, today it looks too far-fetched for most people. I wouldn't use it as a way of attracting people into somebody's work. It's like saying, hey, if you do this, you're going to get enlightened. I don't even know if it exists, you know. I'm not enlightened, so how can I talk about it? That's my understanding about it. I think self-realization is a word that it's a bit closer for people to understand, you know, because you have a sense of realizing dimensions on yourself and somehow having more realizations about yourself. So you can imagine can be a moment where you have this some sort of explosion where you realize about yourself. But again, I don't know.
Okay, that's beautiful and fair enough. Now, to wrap up this epic journey with you, I'd like to discuss what are your thoughts about Osho's recognition today. I think you mentioned at the beginning, part one, that the reason why you started your research to write the book is that you went to uni and you heard some professor using Osho's content, Osho's work, Osho's ideas without citing, without mentioning Osho. And that prompted you in this research. And somehow, similarly, the reason why we started this podcast is because we want to acknowledge Osho for his positive contributions, whereas most of the time Osho is portrayed in a negative way in the media or is neglected, ignored, or his ideas are taken without recognition. So essentially, Osho's contribution is not being given the credit that is just factual. You know, Osho, of course, doesn't care, but it's history. You know, it is what it is. Yes. So do you agree with this? And if you agree, why do you think is that and what we can do about
it? Well, I think Osho did everything he could during his lifetime to pop everybody's balloons. I don't think he was, in a way, a victim of society. I think he pushed the envelope as much as he could. If you look at his life, if you look at the way he lived, about what he did, and I'm talking about giving a discourse in 1968 to 50,000 Indians saying that the way to love was through sex in India in 1968, having his conferences canceled, from having 93 Rolls Royces and dressing like a Star Trek drag queen in the United States at the ranch. I mean, this was not a man who was trying to fit in. I mean, this man was trying to shock the world. This man was trying to crumble society, religious structure. He was trying to shock everybody. He was trying to make you question, think, open your mouth. And he always said, bad publicity is better than no publicity. And I think one of the reasons why you have so many negative reports about Osho is because we're still riding the ripples of what this man started to do as back as 1966. And he wanted that. He wanted to shake people up. And people are still being shaken because society, although we are not in the same society as 1966, but society is still mainly sexually repressive, conservative. Still, the word family is considered a beautiful, positive word. When the people, as me, who work in psychotherapy, we know that it's the building factory of human neurosis. And Osho was saying family is dead, the commune is the future. And from the extreme right to the extreme left, if there is one point where everybody agrees, is the fact that the family is good. And you got Osho saying, no, bullshit, family is the way people get damaged. So, of course, you're going to have negative press about him. And again, when people look at his life superficially, of course, they see this guy dressed in these funny clothes and having 93 Rolls Royces, and nobody's questioning, Nobody has 93 Rolls Royces. Not even Rockefeller had 93 Rolls Royces. Nobody questioned, hey, perhaps there was a point this guy was trying to make? Because if you have a supposedly Indian guru who's trying desperately to attract followers, which is what the yellow press tend to say, perhaps he would have tried to look humble. Perhaps he wouldn't suggest Mother Teresa to jump into a lake. He wouldn't suggest that all churches should be burnt. You know what I mean? So people don't look at it deeper. They just get the headline from the yellow press. And again, Osho was trying to do that. He said, perhaps while their mouths are dropping open, their jaws are opening, I can pull some truth in. So I think that's one of the main reasons. He said, what I'm saying now would be understood perhaps in 50 more years. And I completely agree with that. I think we're still not ready for Osho on the general scale. Now, something very interesting happened in the last years with the publishing work. I mean, this was astonishing, Osho got published in a way where you could find Osho's books in the airports. And lots of people came to Osho through this basically publishing boom. And it was, and it is, still is, selling widely, although people didn't know that Osho was the same guy as Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh who had the scandals in the ranch. They didn't make the connection. Of course, Wild Wild Country solved that problem for them. I said, well, it's the same guy. So again, there was like a surge, but mostly people are interested in what people are interested, which is how many Rolls Royces he had. There was sex there. It was a free sex guru. And were there any orgies? And this shows, I think, about the mentality of the world we live in, where sex is mostly a taboo still. Nudity is a taboo still. And people are still struggling with their own issues around this subject. So I think Osho is still controversial. And 30 years after his death, he's still, popping people's balloons. And I love it.
Basically, what you're saying, if I understand correctly, is that Osho is still too ahead of the times. ideas are so revolutionary that it will take many more years for society. Maybe if
he consciously decided to shake people up. That's my understanding, at least.
Yeah.
And we're still riding that ripple.
But what I hear as well is that Osho wanted his name out. He did everything he could, and he used all these tools and methods, and he asked his people, the sannyasins who were at the time living with him, to be courageous and do it, right?
Yeah.
So, but what I feel, that's my interpretation, maybe I'm completely wrong, and, you know, many sannyasins have done incredible work in many different fields, but at the same time, I feel like Osho's name is somehow not so out there as I would love to. And there are issues with trademark, copyright, and many other things. But I have the feeling that it has to do with what you just said, that because
it's
controversial,
If I might interrupt you, if society would accept Osho as a source of wisdom, either the society has changed dramatically or we cut Osho into pieces. Society as it is now will never accept him. It's impossible. I will never accept him as a source of wisdom. Not the Osho that you and I know.
Yes, but for example, you love Osho and you think his ideas are... You absorb those ideas and you try to live your life based on Osho's ideas because you think that that's a better life than the one that we have been taught to live.
Definitely.
And I guess people who are relating to you maybe are attracted to you by the way you are. And then you say, hey, you know, maybe you want to read an Osho book. So I think the world needs more of Osho's being out there, and that's what he came here to do, and that's why he initiated people, and that's why all the people did the work. And I feel like maybe I'm wrong, maybe this is happening.
I think it is happening on a really wide scale, but it will never be happening in the same way that, I don't know, like Eckhart Tolle. Eckhart Tolle is a beautiful man. He seems to be very enlightened, but he's a harmless man. I mean, he looks like somebody who's never seen a girl. I know he has a girlfriend and so, but you know what I mean? His energy, you don't look at Eckhart Tolle and say, oh my God, I want to be like that man. He's a harmless guy. Osho is not a harmless man. If you come close to Osho, the only way that you can understand is by being transformed. And that means leaving behind your conditioning. That means leaving behind your security, leaving behind your sense of predictability. So Osho, at least in the world that I know, will never be mainstream. It's impossible. Not with the world that we have. Osho is still on the edge. Osho is still counterculture. And you and I and the people who are somehow involved in the work, of course, we're trying to put him out. But if you want to come close to understand this man, you need to go through a transformation. It's not like Krishnamurti, where you can align yourself intellectually with him. I admire and I love Krishnamurti, a beautiful man, and I think very enlightened too. But he never left any bridges between people like us and him. So he was just surrounded by intellectuals at the end. Osho left a lot of bridges and risky ones, you know, where you really, if you wanted to cross it, you really need some courage. I mean, at the time that where we had to dress in red, you know, and that was a device. I mean, come on. I was studying at the university at that time, and I was dressed in red, and I was called all kinds of sort of, you know, disgusting things. I mean, I would have loved to take this off, you know, and be normal, and, you know, having a normal name and not having to deal with all this. But it was part of my transformation. It was a wonderful device that forced me to stand on my own feet. So the breaches that Osho left were scary ones. And I think that's part of the beauty. Because still, if you want to understand this man, you need to be transformed. You can't just have an intellectual understanding of him. And if you think you do, then you're not understanding him, because you haven't read the next book where he contradicts completely all those beautiful ideas that you like.
Yes, yes. I mean, Osho is fire. If you can't close, either you burn and transform or you run away. That's
how I see it. You will be shocked if you start reading Osho. I mean, first you will be attracted to some ideas of some book that had some compilation that you read that you find it was so beautiful. But if you go deeper, you will be shocked. And you will have to deal with your own conditioning and your own assumption and your own ideas. And that's the beauty of it.
That's a beauty, absolutely. But I am a little bit stubborn, so I want to ask you this last question, because you mentioned, for example, that lately there has been a big improvement in the publishing sector.
Yes. I mean,
that's amazing, because that's how people get to know about Osho. So what do you think could be a project which has not materialized as of today that someone who has energy, money, and time that wants to do something just to make Osho more available. Let's put it this way. You know, it's not converting, it's not making, just making like publishing books and making the books available.
You know what I like is what you're doing. What you're doing, you're interviewing people who've been profoundly affected by Osho's work. And I think this is something very interesting, because we human beings are biologically programmed to learn from other human beings. That's why all this technology that we have now with the online classes and because of the pandemic, it's not working in the same way, because our brains are wired to learn from living human beings. So when you hear somebody's testimony and that testimony rings true to you, there's something in you that resonates with that. I like what you're doing, interviewing all these people that were somehow in touch or transformed by Osho's work. Because whoever sees this and whoever watches this, and if this ever can be summarized and built into some sort of documentary, I mean, wouldn't it be interesting? I would be interesting to watch a documentary of the people who were close to or were, I don't know, profoundly transformed by Gurdjieff. I mean, there's been some attempts, but most of the people are dead now. You know, now that we have this technology, there's a couple of films, but would it be fantastic to see what was it, you know, to be close to him or to learn by him. And that kind of project, I think, would be a wonderful documentary. I like Wild Wild Country a lot. I think it's a wonderful documentary. I disagree with many of the things that Sheila said. I think she lied out of her ears, to tell you the truth. And I don't like the fact that it was focused on Sheila, although I understand that from a documentary point of view, she was the interesting subject. But it was great cinematic material. I mean, it was great what they did, and I like the way they did it, you know, further show you the Sannyasin side, they show you like the Oregonian side, and you were flipping your emotional alliances, and in the last two chapters they left you to your own devices, and it was great done, and I think it was a wonderful documentary. But of course, with the point that we mentioned, that some stories that I told there are absolute lies. And something like that, made with love and care, but also with a certain distance. Because if somebody feels that you're absolutely fanatic about something, immediately that creates an emotional distance, you know, from somebody who's not part of the movement. I think something like that would be wonderful, to collect all those testimonies. I did, before my book, I did pre-internet era, lots of interviews with people that I still treasure the information that I got from there. So I think from my side, that would be, if you can pull that off, that would be a wonderful project.
Well, I guess I'm busy for the next 10 years. Okay, well, that's great. Thank you so much. I can't deny that I haven't thought of that, of course. But yeah, it's wonderful. And thanks for reinforcing that the intuition is good. And thanks for the feedback. I really appreciate that. So, my friend, we are getting there, nearly the end of this amazing journey with you. Before we finish, is there anything else you want to add as final thoughts, anything I didn't ask?
No, just to thank you for this opportunity. It's been a pleasure talking to you. I can see your passion. I can see your love. And in general terms, I'm very touched by people who I see have this love and passion for anything in general. And in your particular case, for something that I am also interested in, I think you're quite extraordinary in that sense. And I love what you're doing. And I feel honored and blessed with the fact that you chose to talk to me about my own research and ideas. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thank you. I mean, what you have done is incredibly valuable. I can't thank enough that you have done and that I've come across you, because I didn't know anything. It's been a lady who's been in touch with us who suggested Comalta.
Oh, yes. I want to thank to Comalta making this connection.
So great. Well, thank you so much. And I hope, and I really hope that we can make good use of this content and make it more available one day in other forms as well. Well, lots of love.
Thank you very much, Swaram.
Thank you. Lots of love.
Love for you too.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it and leave a review. Visit lavoshow.com for more episodes, blogs, or to connect with us.